Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. I'd like to begin by wishing you all a very happy and peaceful Christmas. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Each year as we approach Christmas, Pope Benedict shares with us his thoughts. If you've been listening to our programmes or checked out our website over the past weeks, you'll have heard his words this Adventtide.
May this Christmas be for everyone a celebration of peace and joy. Joy at the birth of the Prince of Peace. Together with Mary and Joseph, let us contemplate the newborn child lying in the manger. Through the prayers of the Virgin Mother, may we grow in the knowledge and love of Christ the Savior. A happy Christmas to you and your families.
Indeed, as he's done over the past two Christmases, on one occasion he invited us not to let the child Jesus catch us unawares, as we busy ourselves with Christmas lights and decorations. Instead of decking out our souls and making our homes a worthy dwelling place where Jesus can be welcomed with faith and love. On another occasion, it was in St. Peter's Square last year, he offered us words I found especially striking. It was the 24th of December then, 2006. But stay tuned as I've asked Sean Patrick Lovett to read a passage from his words to the faithful on that particular day.
The birth of Christ helps us to become aware of the value of human life, the life of every human being, from the first instant to natural death. To those who open their heart to this baby wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger, he offers the possibility of seeing with new eyes the realities of every day. He can taste the power of the interior fascination of God's love and is able to transform even sorrow into joy. Let us prepare ourselves to meet Jesus, the Emmanuel, God with us, born in the poverty of Bethlehem. He wants to be the traveling companion of each one of us on our life's journey. In this world, from the very moment when he decided to pitch his tent, no one is a stranger. It is true, we are all here in passing. But it is precisely Jesus who makes us feel at home on this earth, sanctified by his presence. He asks us to make it a home in which all are welcome. The surprising gift of Christmas is exactly this. Jesus came for each one of us, and in him we've become brothers. The corresponding duty is to increasingly overcome preconceptions and prejudices, to break down barriers and eliminate the differences that divide us, or worse, that set individuals and peoples against one another, in order to build together a world of justice and peace. With these sentiments, let us live the last hours that separate us from Christmas, preparing ourselves spiritually to welcome the child Jesus. In the heart of the night, he will come for us. It's his desire also to come in us, to dwell in the heart of every one of us. So that this may occur, it's indispensable that we are open and that we prepare ourselves to receive him, ready to make room for him within ourselves, in our families, in our cities.
Pope Benedict's words read for us by Sean Patrick Lovett. On another occasion, I recall how the Pope invited us not to be clad in silk at Christmas, but in holy works. a Christmas image reflected in some of Monsignor Peter Fleetwood's words, which came to mind as I glanced out of the windows of our building this year. It's cold in Rome right now, and a tent has been set up for the homeless or the needy in a park right across the road from us. I sometimes think of the people who find refuge there while I'm warmly tucked up in bed at night, yet when these same people beg for money in the streets, I often ignore them. But find out what all this has to do with Monsignor Peter's reflection.
Christmas is coming, the goose is getting fat. Please put a penny in the old man's hat. If you haven't got a penny, a halfpenny will do. If you haven't got a halfpenny, well, God bless you. These are the words of a Christmas song that was always sung in our house on Christmas Day. We children were reminded that this was the spirit of Christmas. It is easy to become cynical in our big, rich cities when people stop us in the street asking for money, food, or whatever. We can moan about all these people sleeping rough or begging, the people in non-Western clothes. What are they all doing here? Why are they here? Who let them in? People often ask these questions, but you and I know they don't always put them so politely. My doctor works part of her week in an hospital next to the huge space that was used for the World Youth Day in Rome in the year 2000. That area has now become the biggest nomad camp in Europe. I had no idea about that. It solves a puzzle that had bothered me for a while. I couldn't work out where all these new poor people in Rome lived. My doctor went with some colleagues to ask the people in charge of the new hospital whether they could set aside a space for the people from the camp. There is no way they can pay for health care. These doctors were prepared to work overtime free of charge. The officials told them that if permission was given, they should use the side entrance to avoid offending anyone. My doctor was crestfallen because it is a Catholic hospital. If the authorities in a Catholic hospital have that attitude to the poor and unwanted people in their world, what hope is there? I asked her why she bothered staying Catholic, and she just smiled. It's nearly Christmas. The goose is getting fat. And we're supposed to think of the old man and put a penny in his hat. Just a penny, not much. The song is real because it accepts that some Christians haven't got much to put in the old man's hat, so they can put in less. And God bless those who haven't got anything to put in. It's nearly Christmas. People in Western cities and towns are dashing about spending money. The fat goose is getting worried because it's nearly time for the chop. Other people in a Western city are sifting through dustbins, and I wonder where they sleep or what will happen if they get sick. Their mother is pregnant again and annoys me nearly every day asking for money. She's been here for years, but now I must be getting soft because she makes me think about someone else who was due to have a baby at this time of year centuries ago. No room here, I'm sorry. That's what the innkeeper said. No, I can't give you any more money. That's what I say. It's not true. I don't want to give her any more. She certainly doesn't deserve it, but that's not really the point. It's a perennial problem. People who are wiser than I am tell me money is the last thing to give these people. They're right, but I'm not the only one missing the point. I have heard some of the most ingenious, sad, heart-rending, and untrue stories at the front doors of presbyteries where I have worked or stayed. It makes me very wary. But every now and then, I just don't know. I haven't a clue whether I'm hearing the truth or yet another tall tale. Then I have no choice. I have to help in some way. Where I stay now in Liverpool, there is a strict no money at the door policy. There is a stock of food available. There are contacts who find places to stay, and so on. There is a meal for the homeless, served by the parish priest and a huge band of helpers every Christmas Day. There is usually a way to help. But when you're stopped in the street, you have to think very quickly. Please think hard before saying no. The contemporary translation of "there's no room at the inn" is "there's no room in my heart," or "use the side door." I think of my doctor and smile. She bothers with these people. So should I. So should you. Have a wonderful Christmas and make it wonderful for someone else.
Well, thanks there go to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood for sharing with us this inspiring reflection. And now, on a lighter note, it's time for Christmas carols. We all like singing them and do so each year, but we don't always know their origin. Music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore helps us out.
The joyful news of Christ's birth has inspired Christians throughout the centuries to sing the praises of God. Christmas carols are among the best loved of all forms of sacred music. In England, carols were very popular in the later Middle Ages. One of the few that has survived more or less intact over the centuries is the Coventry Carol. Many carols use folk melodies, so it's quite hard to say just how old they are. In their present form, they're usually from the 19th or 20th centuries. That's to say, they were discovered and arranged for publication and popular use in recent times. One of the great pioneers of research into English folk song was a man called Cecil Sharp. Here's a Christmas carol that he discovered for us at Chipping Campden in Gloucestershire.
The honey and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the honey bears the crown. Oh, the rising of the sun, and the running of the deer, the playing of the merry organs, it's singing in.
Another important figure in the rediscovery of English folk songs was Ralph Vaughan Williams. He was also interested in hymns. In fact, he composed a number of well-known hymns himself, and he edited the English Hymnal. One of the Christmas carols we associate with him uses a folk melody that he discovered in Sussex, still known today as the Sussex Carol. After the Reformation in England, carol singing more or less died out. Certainly there was no place for carols in the Reformed liturgy, because it was forbidden to sing non-scriptural texts in church. This meant no hymn singing at all, except for the Psalms. One of the first Christmas carols to establish itself in England after the Reformation was While Shepherds Watched. And of course, if you look closely at the text, you'll see that it's practically all taken from St. Luke's Gospel. So it was the first Christmas hymn, and for more than 80 years, the only one permitted to be used in Anglican churches.
Why shepherds watch their flocks by night, or season on the ground? The angel of the Lord.
Meanwhile, the English Catholic community was either underground or in exile on the continent. One of the major centres was Douai in Flanders. At the English college in Douai, priests were trained to serve on the English mission. And here came to birth one of the most famous of all Christmas carols, O Come All Ye Faithful, or Adeste Fideles, to use its Latin title. Both the words and the music are attributed to John Francis Wade, who was a professor there during the 18th century. It was first published in England in the 1780s, and it's been a firm favourite ever since. The carols we sing today are of German origin. In fact, so too are many of the traditions surrounding our celebration of Christmas, such as the Christmas tree or Tannenbaum. Counterparts, the Lutheran reformers encouraged hymn singing. Listen to the traditional German carol Es ist ein Rose entsprungen, associated with the 17th century Lutheran composer Michael Praetorius. The best loved of all German carols is In Dulci Jubilo. The text is half in Latin and half in German. J.S. Bach used the tune in a choral setting and also in some of his organ chorale preludes. But it's best known to English-speaking congregations in a 19th century arrangement by Robert Pearsall, which is half in Latin and half in English. Probably the best-known German, or rather Austrian, carol is Stille Nacht, or Silent Night. This was written on Christmas Eve 1818 for the village church in Oberndorf, just north of Salzburg. Since then, it's taken the world by storm. Oh. By the 19th century, hymn singing had come to be accepted in the Church of England. Members of the Wesley family produced many of the new hymn texts. Charles Wesley's Christmas hymn, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, was matched with a tune by Felix Mendelssohn to produce one of the best-loved of all Christmas carols. Mendelssohn had originally written the tune for secular words, and he wasn't sure it would work with a sacred text. He needn't have worried. Speaking of angels singing leads me on to one or two French Christmas carols. The French had their own tradition of Noël, as they were called, few of which are familiar to English speakers today. But I think you might recognise this one, adapted to English words.
Angels we have
tried singing that Gloria after a few Christmas drinks. It's quite a challenge. Another popular French carol using a folk melody from the Provençal region is known as the March of the Kings. Now, if you're familiar with that tune, it could be because you've heard it in the version used by Georges Bizet in his suite L'Arlésienne. Wherever you're spending Christmas, I do hope you'll have the opportunity to celebrate by singing some of the great heritage of carols that have come down to us over the centuries, from different countries, even from different continents. There's some very fine music among them, and how right that it should be so. Only the best is good enough to sing the praises of the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
Oh, thanks there to music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore. And finally, it's time to join our popular Latin lover for another Christmas special. I just want to prompt you into the real meaning of Christmas here. Nativity. Nativity comes from the Latin?
Nascor, to be born.
To be born.
So natus, having been born, nativitas, birth. All the words are all connected.
I think that the image of the nativity is of the cave at Bethlehem, maybe. We can say that, no? What comes to mind to you, the cave at Bethlehem, perhaps?
I don't know about a cave. We have this thing. All the gospel says that there was no place for them in the, what they call the diversorio, in the encampment, the inn-like for the pilgrims. So they were somewhere. I don't know whether it was a cave or not.
So no place in the encampment. How would you say that in Latin?
There was a non erat locus eis in diversorio. The diversorium is like a hotel, kind of a... We'd go off the road into this place. Diversorio.
It's like an inn.
Yeah, like an inn, yeah. So, that's what the gospel says.
But the images the painters have, the artists have...
Whether it was a cave or whether it was someone else's house, I don't even know.
How do you say cave in Latin?
Antrum and caverna and specus and all kinds of words.
Another thing one does at Christmas to celebrate the birth of Christ is to sing carols, right? I have a hymnal here, which starts with Matins, Christe Redemptor Omnium.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the best things in the world.
Christe Redemptor Omnium, what does that mean?
Christ, the Redeemer of all
people. So I want to do the opposite now, and I would like you to translate the fifth verse of this for me, if you can do that. If you want to look at the book here, it says, Earth, sea, and sky. Right? So Earth is terra, no?
Or putting this into Latin now. Oh,
yeah.
I see. Terra, mare, et celum.
By threefold plan.
Triplex dispositio tua.
And all that heaven's wide vault doth span.
Et omnia, this is all from scripture. Et omnia quae celi circuitu continentur.
Echo thy praise in mute accord.
Tua resonant laudem. Tacita concordia or tacito consensu.
To greet the advent of their Lord.
Ut Domini sui salutent adventum.
A big thank you there to Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And that's all I have time for today. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, wishing you all a very happy and peaceful Christmas once again.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.